Podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love, and we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
Yes, and we're here to talk about big penises.
Redwood trees, baby. Boss up, settle down. This is what you came for.
This is Taylor Swift's bawdiest album, shall we say. And there's a lot to get into.
6 albums ago, gasping at the idea of oral sex, and now here we are singing about, I guess, redwood trees is really the only
there's the wet. There's that as well.
Yeah, there's that.
They had to change for the poor
little children.
Yes, the clean version, children.
Which I think is a better lyric because it's "you make me sweat," which is, we're getting ahead of ourselves, but Charlie XCX's tour was called the Sweat Tour, and I think that would have been a better ending, a better final dig at the Charlie v. Taylor beef. But she sings "That Makes Me Wet," and that's funny in its own way, I guess.
So Taylor released "The Life of a Showgirl," and also let me pull up the name of this, because Taylor Swift: the official release party of a showgirl, which was a weird film thing that I did go see in theaters.
Up exactly what it was. It's not.
No. Yes. No. She did. I was like, she did.
I saw some people be like, "What is this? It's not even a movie." It's like, you guys need to learn to read. I need some comprehension going into these things.
Okay. Yes. On one hand, yes, she did say what this was, and so I do feel like, yeah, if you were paying attention, you should have known. And it was only in theaters for 3 days. Like, I don't think it was necessarily like a bad PR stunt that she did, like in her sort of money sucking endeavors. of all of the lunacy of the that tactics. She's trying to get money out of, I don't hate this one the most.
Yeah, yeah.
However, I do think, like, separate of whether or not she said what this was ahead of time, it is a very weird thing as a standalone item. In 20 years, if someone stumbles upon this, it is going to be an odd piece of cultural history. You know, it's like,
right. I mean, to set the stage, it does mirror like what her listening parties had been in her homes, right? Is she would introduce the song, kind of talk about it, and then they'd listen to it. So they add the visual element of the lyric video, but I am curious, like, for you as sort of a regretful listener, as sort of a resistant witness to these albums, how do you think it was generally like, oh, okay, I can kind of get why this was helpful or like interesting and like what it adds to a listening experience? Or do you think it was just kind of, wow, I can't believe some fans eat this up?
Yes. So I guess, yeah, to talk about my sort of experience with this album as a whole, I listened to it when it came out. It's only 12 tracks, which I am, the next day. So it's only 12 tracks, which I was thankful for.
Yeah,
and
like
we did not get any surprise drops of anything, which I was also thankful for. Yes. Because wasn't the last album that was like 36 songs
or something?
Yeah, there
was 3 anthology. Yeah.
It was so much. So I did really appreciate that she edited this down. I feel like I have a better grasp on what these songs are. I can remember them more clearly, like all of them that I don't remember as much, but like as a whole, they stand out in my mind. They're more individual. So I appreciated that. And then I saw that this was being announced. I was like, okay, I feel like I feel like I should see it for a variety of reasons.
Yeah.
For the podcast, obviously, for work, just like for general talking points. Also, like as a professional Taylor Swift hater, I feel like I need to have all of the information if I'm going to be a credible, you know, source on this subject. So I wanted to go see it. I did what I did with the last Taylor Swift thing, where I booked a AMC A-list ticket to another movie that was at the same time.
One battle after another, yeah.
And then I'm like, what did I end up buying a ticket to? Because this was a weird... Because this is only 90 minutes and they were showing it over and over and over again, the times didn't quite line up to like when the rest of the movie's
playing. Yeah.
So I went and saw Daniel Day-Lewis in Anemone.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Because that was the movie that like most closely, right. Yeah. Lined up to this. Because I couldn't get a ticket to one and then get there and then be like, the movie's not for 3 hours. Like, why are you here?
I respect it. That's fine.
Like, I had to be somewhat plausible. So I ended up seeing this on, I think it was the Sunday afternoon. So later into the run, it was a lot of little kids. I'll say that. Like, it was lot of tweens. The theater clapped after every single song. So that was a development. And yeah, I would say on the whole, I like this. I thought that this was a helpful experience for me. You know, so you get there, she shows the Fate of Ophelia music video, which is the sort of lead single off the album and also the first track on the album. So you watch that music video, hear that song. Then there is, I think, a little bit of like sort of behind the scenes footage of them kind of making it or their thought process behind it. And then we go into the tracks, track by track. And she sets everyone up, sort of talking to camera a bit about what it is and why she wrote it. Then we get the lyric video for that. And then also intercut every couple of songs, we get another snippet of how they filmed a section of the music video, because the music video has different sections. So it's sort of like, okay, now we're going to focus on the boat. Okay, now we're going to focus on the sort of swimmer number. Like, now we're going to do the hotel thing. And then at the end, they re-show the music video, which I did really like, because having watched all of the makings of, it was fun to sort of like get to see it again. And I do think that this is one of her better music videos.
That creatively,
and that she's directed. Like, it's a fun music video to watch. There's a lot going on. There's a lot. It's very interesting. Like, I think if I had had to watch this with the
Parma,
Willow. With that, or with like even the one with Post Malone last time. It's like there's
something.
As much there. Fortnite.
No, I agree. And I think it helped that this was all practical. Well, I mean, not all practical, but she tends to lean heavily on the CGI. Like, just thinking of the Karma video makes me sick to my stomach. Or Bejeweled. It's like, there's too much weird CGI diamonds floating around, whatever. This is very much like, they're long shots of single sets. They're all on this sort of like soundstage as the setup of the showgirl life. And so I appreciated that. I was like, oh, okay, this is actually a good music video. Like, I'm grateful. Like, I've been fed trash for so long that this was a relief for me personally. So,
So I sort of enjoyed that experience. I will say, like, I don't know when in the process of the release they decided to do this.
I don't know. Videos?
Well, yeah, because I'm like, the lyric videos were bad.
They were so bad.
They were the lyric videos. So I'm sure that like they were filmed for that. But basically, it was each lyric video was a couple of like gifts, basically, from one moment of the Fate of Ophelia music video that just played over and over.
I hated it.
So you would watch Taylor Swift sort of like wink at the camera or whatever.
It was like kaleidoscopy.
In this. And they clearly weren't filmed for the dimensions of a movie screen. So there was like weird filler on the sides. And it was just.
That was intentional.
It was just an odd.
That's like the design style. But yeah, it was bad. Because you've like, if you look back, I don't know if you've ever, if you, Matt, have ever watched one of her lyric videos. But like, the Look What You Made Me Do lyric video has really cool art of like a snake eating its own tail, or like The Man has a lyric video of, again, art of a woman kind of chasing her own shadow. And so I expected something more like that. But this was very, very like, graphic design is my passion style of just whip this together.
It was very, it was, I mean, these were basically like when you open up Spotify and you're listening to a song and kind of like the thing that's going on behind the song. That's what this was. Like, that's the full extent of what this was. I'm not saying that she needed to make, you know, 12 music videos and have them all there, although I think that would have obviously been more interesting.
Yeah.
But I think that you could just, like, if they had just used more B-roll of her, or if they had completely gotten rid of her and just did animations, or honestly, even if they just did, like if I was sitting there and it was just like a black background with white words on it, it would have somehow been better than watching the same weird interactions of her over and over and over again. Because then by the time that you watched her do whatever the move was, like for the 12th time, I feel like I was really analyzing, like, why is her foot like that? Like, that's
why is she drawing the heart that way? That seems weird.
Yeah. So it was kind of a bizarre, experience, but I did feel like watching it with the lyric videos helped me be like, oh, okay, that's what this song is, this is what this is about, especially because she explained it ahead of time. So as somebody trying to like take it all in, or, you know, kind of study it in a way, I thought that was really helpful. And apparently other, like, the kids and stuff liked it as well, so I think this did seem to be a hit. I would be shocked if we didn't either see her do another better version of this for whenever her next album is, or other people do a similar thing when their albums come out, because this seems fairly easy to do and like a good way to make some extra money.
I'm surprised people paid for it. That's where I landed. I mean, because it makes sense. And I think also, as far as Taylor Swift has set up her fandom, it's exactly what we want, right? Like, from the words of her mouth, this is what the song's about, the end. And you also get like her sort of humor through it, or whatever, the winking nods and how she talks about wood, LOL. Like, it's all just like, it adds to the experiential side of being a Swiftie. And so it makes sense. I don't know the right form to do it, because it does seem weird to pay $15 to $20 to do this. But it would have been interesting. Like, I like when Sabrina Carpenter explains the process of a song, but it's always, you always have to like kind of find it across like radio, or she said this on a talk show once, or they did this in the, they talked about this in the review. And so it was nice to have it all in one place and to have her be like, dun, 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 here it is.
I think that was just like her negotiating with the AMC. Like, if you're not a Stubbs member, then you would have to pay for it, like, no matter what. Yeah. But I think if this was like, if this wasn't Taylor Swift, if this was Demi Lovato or whatever, and she was working with Sony for this, then it would just be like a Sony movie that got released for one weekend. Like, I don't think that she would have had to charge $12. I saw on TikTok various like movie distributor people or theater owners and stuff talking about some of the weird like things that they had to do in order to play this, or why they couldn't play it in their theaters. So that were all related to her.
Yeah.
I do, sort of segueing from the movie into the album itself. I do think it's always interesting to me to watch celebrities sort of have to navigate their lives. And I think that, it's always just so intriguing to me, because I think it's something that we don't get to see a lot of. And so I like watching celebrities have to interact with kind of, you know, quote unquote, normal people. like the backup dancers, the choreographer, the whatever, like these non-famous individuals who are working with her, and think about like what those interactions look like. And watching this, it's not like she's pushing forward sort of like bad ideas necessarily, because I do think that this all turned out well, but it was interesting watching like her sort of come up with an idea And I'm sure that, yeah, if there was an idea that was bad, that whatever, like, that maybe just got cut from the movie. But, like, the quickness with which everyone sort of, like, agreed to whatever she said. Where she's like, wouldn't it be funny if I, like, striked a match off my dress in this scene, timed this line? And it was like, that's so weird. It's so unnecessary. We already have a fire breather. I don't know. It's also like, she's like, oh, and, like, what's the weirdest thing we could strike a match on? Like, my dress? Like, she says it like three times talking about the dress, and the people are like, oh my gosh, yeah, that's such a good idea, like, that's so funny. And
my personal favorite was, guys, there's a part in the song where I sing and I hear you calling on the megaphone, and we can have a megaphone.
yes exactly.
I love that it's like, oh yeah
and it's just all so these people being like, yes, oh my gosh, yes, yes, oh my gosh, that's so funny, oh yeah, great, hilarious. And it's like, I don't, like, they're not bad decisions, but you can just tell that there's zero pushback coming from her or from anyone
or
on that.
She was talking about, like, where she's gonna hit her mark in the big, like, bubble scene. And she's like, actually, I'm just gonna walk down the length of it, end up here. And she's like, oh yeah. It was interesting, like, there was no real discussion. And I mean, to be fair, it was a very rehearsed project at that point, but it was, so, like, who knows the dialogue that was happening before they got to stage. But it was fascinating. It was I love it too.
And it's, and I think that that's where you can tell, like, some, I don't think this album is as strong as some of her previous albums are. I think there's kind of, like, a weird lack of point of view in certain places. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't feel like the album of someone who's hungry, of someone who, like, feels like they have to prove something. It feels like the album of somebody who's kind of on top and sort of doesn't really know what to do while they're up there.
It felt like a quick, like, stop. Like, she talks about it, that she realized she could get back with Max Martin and Shellback during this tour. She was in Europe. She could swing by Sweden every now and then and put this together. And it does feel just kind of like a summer project. Like, it does, there is an essence of, like, she says, oh, we made sure every track on this was essential. Everything in this was perfect. It's 12. We had our limits. We knew what to do. But in some cases, it almost feels like the opposite. Like, they had to fill time. Like, there's a couple of tracks here where I'm like, what is this doing here? What are we saying with those? And I think it was just, like, something fun to do, which is interesting to think about, a celebrity at her level just having fun with this instead of, making it her whole life's purpose. And the pros and cons of that.
And it also feels like she was, in some cases, kind of, like, looking around for subject material to write about. Mm-hmm. And so she either, like, went back to stuff that she's already kind of, like, gone through, or is picking things that sort of don't feel quite right. And you do, and I did kind of wonder if, it earlier stages of her career, if either A, someone would have pushed back on certain aspects of things or certain lines and been like, wait, this, like, kind of doesn't make sense. Like, I don't know why this is here. Mm-hmm. Or B, she would have felt like she had sort of more to prove. So she would have done, like, you know, with Folklore or whatever, it's like she wrote all of these songs. And then even though she still released a bunch of them, it's like, you sort of get the feeling that these are the ones that she selected out of a larger group.
Well,
this kind of feels like, oh, we need 12 songs for the record. We've gotten four good ones. So I guess let's chill. That one's okay. Okay, sure, throw that one out.
No, I think, and I think too, we've seen this with the Vault tracks coming out. It's like, you see her edit process by what she did not put on these albums and has brought back for the re-releases. And you can see, like, oh, yeah, you know, Message in a Bottle is a fun song. It's strong. But compared to something like I Knew You Were Trouble, of course, this isn't going to get on Red. And so you like, see how whatever it was, if it was her manager or just the people around her pushing her to, like, really put an album together, there was some editing happening. Whereas this, it's like she has all these audio files of her working with Max Martin and Shellback now, where she's like, they're talking through the song or whatever. And it is just kind of like, yeah, there's less pressure, it feels. There's from all sides. There's less like, I don't know, some sort of harder motivation than just like, ooh, let's do an album. Like, it's very much, and yeah, whatever them, goes.
And some of the metaphors like don't quite match up, I think, yeah, to what she's trying to say. Like there's a good germ of an idea there, but it yeah, kind of just needed to be tweaked once mm-hmm, or twice. And like, we've talked about this with directors, we've talked about this with authors. Like, I think with anybody, when they get yeah, to a certain point in their career, it's harder for them to find people who are willing to stand up to them or mm-hmm, to give them sort of like any critique. And you get a yeah, lot of yes men. And so then the only people who are there who are going to critique you are the general yeah, public. And I think that's harder to sort of like either accept or osmose or mm-hmm, deal with, because it's like, okay, well, there's obviously the group of people who despise Taylor Swift, who yeah, are never going to like her stuff. There's obviously these fans who are always yeah, going to like her stuff. You know, it's like, I've talked to multiple people since this came out that have been like, well, the first time I listened to it, I didn't like it. But actually, if you, you know, sort of think about it, or this sort of grew on me or whatever. And it's like, okay, yeah, like I understand that. But I don't necessarily think that this,
that makes it great.
Yeah. And I'll say this, when Lady Gaga's new album came out mm, earlier this year, mm-hmm, I initially did not like it. I feel yeah, like the longer I've listened to it, the more I've sort of been like, this is yeah, fine. But I think that both of those albums are sort of similar mm-hmm, in that I don't think that they're the artist at their strongest. Mm-hmm. They sort of feel like they're mm-hmm, a little bit purposeless, and they're just kind of doing it to yeah, do it, and there's not really that much to say. And there's also a lot of weird metaphors on both of them that are kind of like, I know that you think that this is kind of yeah, cool, but it's just sort of feels out of place when
yeah
it's like I don't get, like, okay, opalite is like a fake opal, but then it's kind of like, what, like this, like I understand well, like, how this kind of works on paper yeah, but like in actuality I feel like this isn't You Belong With Me, where it's like so clear what the point of right, view is, and you get the message and you understand it yeah, so well.
Well, and I think it's hard because Taylor Swift has now become like so much bigger than herself. And I think the way she's talked about this on whether it's soundbites or interviews or whatever, and, you know, unreliable narrator, I get all that. But at some point she's like, yeah, I just saw an episode of Succession and I started thinking of the song Father Figure. But then she also ties it into her personal life. And so it is sort of interesting to think of the tangled web of like, when do you fictionalize? When do you editorialize? When do you diarize? You know, like, it's like there's so much at play with making a Taylor Swift track, like knowing it's going to be seen as purely diaristic and kind of like, well, how do I toy with that? And also, how do I stay true to that? And then, yeah, on top of it, she is just like operating in her own bubble, which she admits to. She didn't even tell her label that she was working on this album until it was done, like a month ago, because all they have to do is work on, like delivering the literal physical copies. And so she has this little bubble of people she trusts. She does not go outside of it. She is not interested in inviting people into it. And so, yeah, you do kind of get this like, yeah, it's a very, very safe bubble. And all of the songs represent that. It's very easy, breezy. And those metaphors, no matter like how deep the subject matter, it'll always just be like the flimsiest first draft because no one's like pushing her to try harder.
Yeah. And not, I mean, I think Beyonce and Taylor Swift are very different people, and not necessarily to compare them, but like on Renaissance and Cowboy Carter, like if you look at those, like credits, all the list, yeah, the credits, it's like there's so many people, like yeah, she is pulling from so many people, and there's lots of like there's writers and stuff who are like, oh yeah, I wrote 7 songs with Beyonce for Renaissance, none of them got on the album, yeah, you know, like that kind yeah, of like she was yeah, clearly working on lots of things with lots of different people with lots of pieces involved, and yeah, sort of almost operating in the opposite way of Taylor Swift, of like where Taylor's like, yes, okay, we got to keep something the secret, approved, so yeah, we're gonna keep it in a small group of people, Beyonce's like, we're going to involve so many people that like nobody really knows what's going on. Like everybody's yeah. working on little pieces of it. And then, like, and then I so will yeah. pick the best pieces of it. And that will be the album.
That's a unique way of framing it. I think Taylor should try that next, is just right. over-involve and then no one will know.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, to generally, I was looking forward to this album, I think mainly because Max Martin and Shellback are such like pop hit wunderkinds. And like, I love a dance hall moment. Like I wanted like a fun, punchy album. And so my first listen to this was pretty solidly, wow, I do not like this. This is not good. This is actively bad. And most of these songs annoy the crap out of me. I do think that their production is stronger than she's had in previous pop albums, from like Lover with Joel Little, and obviously a lot of her projects with what's his name? Why can't I remember it? Jack Antonoff.
Yes.
And so like in that way, it is a more interesting listen. Like there's a lot of like really good, I don't know music terminology well enough to say what's vibing here, but there's some interesting like musical choices and notes and sounds that are playing here that I think are really tight and good. But yeah, I was left disappointed, not only by the music itself, but sort of like I felt sort of like there was a bait and switch in how she stylized and promoted this album as like, woo, diamonds and glitter and glads, and it's pop album, and it's like her whole Max Martin and Shellback catalog of just their highest hits. And then this was very much like, okay, no, this is just like Midnights. Like it's less about dancing and more about like driving in your car listening to a pop yeah. album. Like mm-hmm. And so in that sense, it didn't really work for me, and I've sat a lot with it. I've listened to it a lot because at my heart, I'm still like,
you're trying.
I'm a Swiftie. Yeah, this is me trying. And I've like come around to three songs that I really like, three songs that I absolutely loathe. And then everything else is basically, that's fine to okay. That's where I stand. Like this album is just fine. And I think the discourse around it is truly exhausting, because in today's like day and age, we can't just allow something to be bad. It's either the worst thing they've ever made and the end of their career as they know it, and the downward spiral. Like I saw a Katy Perry fan be like, oh, we're about to see what Swifties do when their favorite finally has a flop. And it's like, no, this is not Witness or whatever. Like this isn't as bad as some people's worst. It's just like forgettable. I don't know.
Yeah, it is sort of interesting to see where her career goes from here, just because, like, I do think that she had such a string of, like, strong point of view successes. Mm-hmm. And I think that the last, I think, what was before Tortured Poets?
Midnights.
Yeah, I feel like Midnights, Tortured Poets, and this are all, like, kind of in the same space, but, like, we're getting diminishing returns as we go along. And I sort of feel like she needs to either like somehow or another have something that's more specific and like has a stronger point of view, or at some point she's gonna, you know, start like dropping off to a certain degree. I mean,
yeah,
like not necessarily like now or because of this album, but you know, just like that's how time works, that's how yeah. time passes. Like the Beatles are not the Beatles anymore.
R.I.P.
I mean, well, yeah, granted they died, but you know, whatever. Yeah, yeah, like you know yeah. what I'm saying, like Bruce Springsteen yeah.
is
not
Travis
the same.
Kelsey yes. Yoko Ono. I mean maybe.
Yeah, I feel like that there's two good songs on this album.
Okay,
and then yes, again. And then a couple of them that are like, oh wait, this is actually like intolerable. Like, no. And then again, some middling yeah, kind yeah. of like, okay, yeah. whatever.
Okay, I think you mentioned in your Substack that you liked Life of a Showgirl.
Okay.
And I don't remember, and I think you liked Elizabeth Taylor. That
do
feels
I
t- wrong.
Do I tell you that now? Or
that
do
feels
I,
wrong.
Do we wait?
Now I'm trying to remember them all. Okay. I think you liked The Life of a Showgirl and Elizabeth Taylor the most.
I'm like, I don't know if I'm just like putting my like thoughts on your thoughts, but I'm like, I feel like you also probably like The Life of a Showgirl. You like Sabrina Carpenter.
Yeah.
And I feel like you probably liked The Fate of Ophelia. And then I don't know, maybe are you the eldest daughter? No, you're not. but you do sort of have eldest daughter energy.
I do have
in
that
some
energy,
ways.
I've been told,
So maybe you like that one.
From uniqueness.
Yes, a terminal whatever. Yeah. But okay, do you want to go track by track through these
then?
Yeah,
let's do it.
Okay, so we start out with The Fate of Ophelia, which is her title track and which has the music video attached to it. This is a Hamlet metaphor.
Or a Hamlet
reference,
like,
I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's sort of like it's Anne Juliet kind of energy, I would say.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I didn't hate.
Yeah, I think it's her strongest single she's had in a while.
Okay.
Lead single.
And I kind of don't I sort of am slightly confused as to why you would have all of your marketing or whatever be The Life of the Showgirl and then have a song that is about that and that is the one with Sabrina Carpenter. Like, that seems like obviously it's going to be a single at some point. Maybe she just didn't want to have Sabrina Carpenter on the lead single with her. Like, she wanted a solo one.
I think this makes sense as a lead because it's very theatrical.
Yes. And the music video, I think, works well with it.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it also sets up what she thinks this album is about, which is about being in love. I could argue with that all day because I think so many of these songs really struggle to be relevant in that reading. But
oh yes, but, most of them.
Yeah, but I think she's trying to say like it sets up as, you know, she finally found the guy who saved her from feeling crazy about love, and that's like generically what The Fate of Ophelia is that all these men were driving her insane. And she thought she was doomed to literally just melt away in a river. Yeah. And then this guy, you know, the vibes are high. He keeps it 100 and she's ready to pledge allegiance to the Kansas City Chiefs. So.
Yeah. Yeah. This song was fine. I don't hate it. I did not love it.
Yeah. At first I was worried about like the, okay, is this going to be a full football reference album? Like I cannot deal with this, but this ended up being like the least painful metaphors, so
we're gonna go through some real like forced metaphors in this album. I do kind of wonder though if there is something about like her current feelings that don't really lend themselves well to writing of just kind of like being happy and dating this sort of like doofy guy, because it feels like as a muse, Travis Kelce has not quite delivered in the same way that like Joe Alwyn did.
Yes.
Or
I will say this was all written in winter of 2023, so they've now had more time together, so hopefully like her love has deepened to something more interesting, you know.
I'll say this. There is not a single track on this album that holds a candle to London Boy. Like, that, like, I'm like, and that was such an easy song, I think, for, or like, it's so,
that's
it's like,
your peak. That's
it's
like,
not,
romance.
But I'm like, that's like not even like an incredibly like well put together song.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm like, I think that's actually better than anything here.
Yeah.
And it's so, and like the point of view is so clear. It's like, yeah. Oh, I'm dating someone from England. Let me put a bunch of like British slang and locations in this like no very idea. Poppy song.
So deeply.
But
yeah.
like
can we
this
go
is
driving
like,
round on my scooter.
Right, exactly. It's like it just works. And I don't think that there's anything here that's like quite
wood,
you know, grabbing.
Wood isn't giving that.
No,
wood is it,
it's
is
not.
It delivery.
And I don't want to listen to a song that's like all football metaphors if we're gonna get that at some point either.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
Maybe it's just that the British references work better.
Punchy.
But yeah. But okay. So anyways, that's Fate of Ophelia. Track two is Elizabeth Taylor, which I think on paper makes a great deal of sense for a song for Taylor to write. Mm-hmm. And I think has the potential to be an incredibly, one of her greatest songs, because Elizabeth Taylor was obviously married to 6 different men. That was a big thing about her. One of them she married twice, I think. So it was actually 6 marriages, 5 men. But like, that was a big thing. Taylor Swift has dated all of these famous people. People are very interested in her life. Like, and we've seen Taylor Swift like pull either pieces from history or you know, like Great Gatsby or that woman who bought her house or whatever, you know, like she is capable, I believe, in making this work.
History, yeah.
This song was not
pretty shallow. Yeah. Pretty surface level.
And I'm like, I think that somebody at some point should have told, because she can't do another like, Elizabeth Taylor song.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Like, this is the one, like, she's used that concept now, and she did not use it to its full extent. Like, I think that this should have been
But the production.
She could have done something else. Elizabeth Taylor. Yeah, okay.
No, I agree. It's like, if the only thing you can draw out of Elizabeth Taylor's life is, I don't know, she lived in New York and Hollywood. Like, I don't think you understand the source as much as you want. Like, and that's, I think one of her sharpest lines in Reputation is, you can be my jailer, Burton to this Taylor. Like, that was a fun twist and like a connection to make to Elizabeth Taylor and the romance there. But it's like, yeah, this as an ode to Elizabeth Taylor doesn't work great. I think it is a fun song though. And I do like the, all my diamonds and lovers are forever in the papers on the screen and in their minds. Like, it's like, that's clever to like reference how these men are obsessed with him. The world is obsessed with her being obsessed with these men, and like, they will never forget her. They'll always be associated with her. And I just think of poor like Tom Hiddleston on his various, you know, tours being asked about like, what do you think about Taylor Swift's sourdough? And it's like, what are we doing here? But yeah, I think the hits could have been harder for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Moving on. Track 3 is Opalite. And I did not know what Opalite was.
She
explained in the music video that it's like synthetic opal. Mm-hmm. And that she, or in the
man-made
video or whatever. Yes, that it's man-made. It's like the synthetic opal. She really liked the word. It was in her, like, she has a notes app on her phone where she just like writes all of these things, and this was a word that she had here. This, I think, is another one of these like weird mixed metaphor sort of songs that doesn't quite work, because it's like, okay, it's about fake opals, but then the chorus is about like weather and and like, you were dancing through the lightning strike, sleeping in the onyx night, which like onyx night is, that's a bad, I'm like, that's boring to me. And just like a weird,
it's just a stone way to say night. It's
right.
Dark,
yeah.
It's black.
And then, but now the sky is opalite. It's just like, I'm kind of like,
it's very cutesy. It honestly, when I first heard this, I was like, this sounds like Christmas Tree Farm. Like it has that very Christmassy.
Yes. It does have a Christmas aspect to it.
And I agree. I think it's like, there's parts of the song that I think are like really strong or interesting, or like, I don't know, when she talks about eating out of the trash and like, and when you know, and when you don't, like I like that setup, but I do think it kind of struggles to keep the energy. I mean, she's written some, like, she has a long discography of songs that maybe run shallow but have something interesting to say, or like you said, a stronger perspective or point of view. And I can see your point that this kind of stumbles along the metaphors. I'll let you have that.
It's not the worst song by any means. Yeah. It's sort of inoffensive, but again, if her talking point is like, every song on this album has a purpose, like you had to earn your spot to be here. It's like, this song feels like it should have been, you know, track like 14 on you know, the second half of one of these other, like, it's neither here nor there. And to be the third track on an album with only 12 tracks feels a little bit like,
This was the beginning of the end for me. I was like,
yes, unfortunately,
I was dialed in for the first two, and then this. I like this song as far as like it has like the same sort of harmless energy of like Stay, 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 where it's just like really perky and fun to listen to. But I do hate the second verse where she talks about Travis Kelce's ex, but that's neither here nor there. It does kind of like, it doesn't hold up to snuff, I guess. I see your point. Yeah.
Okay. Then we have Father Figure, which I can't remember if we talked about this in the podcast or not, but some young Swiftie was like, either George Michael wrote this or they're using a sample of his song Father Figure. And it's like, well, he's been dead. So I think we're using a sample.
Yeah.
Yes. So this is a sample of Father Figure.
It's not a sample though, unfortunately.
And not enough of one.
It's just he gets songwriting credits because she uses the line, I'll be your father figure.
Yeah.
It's too bad.
And this is, this is the one, this is supposedly about Succession, or that was the,
it's like
influence
about
this.
Power structures and how things can switch and how it's all who has the power and when does that allegiance change?
Yeah. So I think that there's a piece of this that's like, okay, this is about Scooter Braun and what Scott
Borchetta,
Borchetta or whatever, and how he, you know, like how he was taking care of her, but then like she got too big for her britches, and then he was like, you know, trying to put her in her place. Then there's also like the other dynamic about her relationship with Olivia Rodrigo, which I don't know if that was
in play
necessarily while she's writing this, but I've definitely seen a lot of like think pieces about that,
of course, yeah,
and how, you know, like there was the whole debacle with what was it, Deja Vu, where she sort of was like, hey, I want songwriting credit for this and all of this money, and it's like, why exactly? Like, you already have so much money, like this isn't something that you really need. So I think that's kind of a murky I don't know, potential like dark side to this song a bit. But then also you just have the line, I can make deals with the devil because my dick's bigger. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I don't need that in the chorus.
You know, like
playing every single time. Like, I don't need that line six times in this song. It's just like, okay, like we get it. You're trying to sort of, I guess, be edgier on this album. Yeah. Like, you're trying to be punk rock, but it's weird. And I don't, like,
but giving, do you think Taylor could ever write a song where you'd allow that? Or do you think she's just this person in your mind that hasn't earned that sort of hard edge?
It's sort of giving to me when they ask like Miranda Cosgrove what her favorite swear word is. Like, it's not that I don't think that she's like capable of, you know, saying things like this, or that she's like a woman and she should be like in her place and, you know, not be crass or something, because I feel like someone like Sabrina Carpenter could easily say this line, and I think it would like make sense within her kind of like, like on the outside I'm like this sugary sweet person, but sort of like I have this subversive sense of humor. With Taylor Swift, to me, all of the times where she sort of like randomly interjects a, you know, more like sexual term, feels a little bit like a kid who's like just learned a swear word and is trying to, say it. Like, I don't know. It reminded me of, the part in To Kill a Mockingbird where Scout is trying to like get her family's attention and no one's paying attention to her, so she says pass the damn ham at Christmas because she's like, oh, maybe this will like get someone to notice me. Oh, nope, that didn't work. Like, I don't know, it just,
I mean, I've seen a lot of discourse around this line in similar veins, and I guess maybe I circle back to there being so many cringier parts of this that this doesn't even stand out to me. Because it's it's a common enough idea of like, of this like dick measuring contest in business or whatever. And it's sort of like, I don't know.
I think if this was in a verse, or if this was like the hook of a, you know, whatever, like and it was sort of more the button of something.
Like, okay, yeah, it would work like, better. I'll give it a bridge, but you don't want to repeat it.
But it's in it's the same line, like over and over and over again in all of these choruses. And then the chorus itself is kind of like feels very posture-y.
Yeah. So like, do you like the clean version more? I make deals with the devil because my check's bigger.
Oh yes. I don't know, because I think that's also a bad line. And then it's like, this love is pure profit. Just step into my office. Like it's giving, like, oh, I want to like everybody, let's brainstorm some like, Wall Street terms. And then the first five we come up with, we're going to put in this song. Like, I think
well, but it is like, it is metaphor. Like it's not literal, like, but it is like referencing, you know, she was 14 when she signed a deal and Scott was, you know, like promising the world in a way. And then the song mirrors that sort of language of the bro-y salesman.
And then she
flips it.
I like get it. Yeah. I think that again, like I think that there's a better version of this here, you know, like I think that's going to be a common thing as we go throughout this of like, I think that there is a song about like, oh yeah, like you were the person who sort of like took care of me, and then I realized you were actually taking care of yourself, and then now I have become this person who is sort of like a business tycoon, and how do I handle that? Am I falling into the same traps? Am I doing it differently? Am I trying to do it differently? Like, I think that is an interesting concept. I just don't know if like,
it's not,
you know, because my dick's bigger is giving it the nuance that I'm looking for.
Yeah, 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 for sure. I don't want to go to bat for this song. I don't love it. So.
Okay. Moving on. Number five, Eldest Daughter.
Eldest Daughter, track five. She's famous for these like, oh, I always put my heaviest, deepest song on track five. And this is one that I know you'll like roll your eyes at, but it was like, I didn't love it. It's definitely not like even top five of her track fives for me at all. But I do think I get more of what she was attempting, because this is the song that people cite with like, wow, Taylor Swift went full cringe. Like, she's so millennial. The internet lingo has to stop. Like, this is too much. But I do think this song is doing something very specific with that lingo being like front and center, in that she's singing about having to strip that down to actually be like her honest self. Like, she's always been a tryhard. It's giving Mirror Ball, but in like a worse way. and so I fault her for that, for it not being great, but I don't think it deserves necessarily the like hate it's gotten as like, oh, this is bad writing. Because I do think there's some intentionality in what she's doing with like, oh, we looked fire and I'm not a savage. I'm not a bad bitch. This isn't savage. Like all of that.
Yeah. I didn't love this one. I do like, I really do like the sort of thought process of like sort of in the new Superman movie where they're talking about like, oh, like isn't kindness sort of like the new punk rock or whatever. Like and I think that that is something that Brat talks a lot about of like, oh, vulnerability is sort of this crazy thing. Like, we've gotten to a point in society where everybody wants to be cool, but maybe the coolest part is sort of just being like
nice,
like bearing yourself and being nice and being vulnerable and talking through your insecurities, you know, and saying like, oh, I like you, Lord, and I want to hang out with you, but at the same time, like, I get insecure because of all of these different things, and like, how do I, and rather than keep all of that internalized and just be like, oh, I'm too cool for her to vocalize all of that and be sort of raw. Yeah. So I get that. But I feel like this sort of is like there's like a sort of like accusatory kind of element to it of like, everybody's so punk on the internet and you guys are all like trying so hard. And I understand that there's a lot of like people online, obviously myself included, who are like not fans of hers. but I don't know. I didn't.
I think it's more about how she presents herself too, of like,
Right.
She has tried on these different masks of like, oh yeah, I'm going out with my girl squad and we're all fire and we've never been happier to be so single and marriage is lame and I don't want any of it. And also the like pattern of I'm not a bad bitch. This isn't Savage. Mirrors. I'm not a princess. This ain't a fairy tale. And like, and so the layers happening here, I think, are interesting, but I do feel like it struggles under the weight of making it a love song, because that's kind of where it lost me. Is like, I think if this had just stuck to being concerned about how she felt about herself, that would have made sense. But it really is like a love song. It's about how being with him, like, or opening herself up to being with him ended up being the best thing because now she has like real love or whatever, blah blah blah. And I think that's where the song kind of fizzles. And I don't know, again, if we're circling back to Travis Kelce as a muse, but it just didn't like work for me. Like that marrying of, oh, how are we like presenting ourselves and like dealing with this like angst and this terminal uniqueness while also being vulnerable. And also I happen to fall in love, guys, and I've never been happier. And yeah, I wrote down in my first listen, it's like, how do you like write a love song that's better than the ones she wrote for Joe? Because it's like, this isn't hitting the same way like New Year's Day does, or some of these tracks, or Lover, where it's like, I don't know. I think that's an interesting pressure to have now that she's in like her actual like love. Because obviously a lot of Joe songs have a lot of anxiety. You have Cruel Summer, you have King of My Heart, where it's all like, is this real? Are you going to leave me? Type of panic. And it's nice to have a love where she doesn't feel that. But how do you then make a love song that captures that without that tension, without some sort of, well, what is this? And I don't know if this is really doing it. I don't think this is working as a love song for me.
Well, you do. I mean, not to discredit, you know, the Kelces and their various football entourages and such. But I do think that there is a certain degree of like you become the person who you hang out with. Like if you're hanging out with a bunch of people who are very artistic and are talking about art and are trying, you know, if you're hanging out with Joe Alwyn, who is, you know, like a serious actor, and you're in these circles with those kind of people, I think that those conversations and what you're thinking about and how that comes out in your songwriting is very different than whatever conversation she's having with Travis Kelce. I don't know how.
Respect,
how much he's talking about art and, you know, sort of these like nuanced. He's like,
we're keeping it 100, ideas. Baby. Viva also, Las Vegas.
Exactly. I also don't love, and this is something that I also quibbled with in Fate of Ophelia, where I'm like, okay, somebody needs to go to therapy, because I don't like this idea of like, I was in a shitty place because all of these other boyfriends and I needed a new better boyfriend to save me from that. It's like, no, the answer is the reason why And Juliet works as a musical is because Juliet is like, oh, wait, no, I don't actually give a fuck about Romeo. Yeah. Like, I'm going to live my life. I don't need a man. Sorry, I can be happy no matter what. Not like, oh, well, I don't want Romeo, but maybe a better version of Romeo comes along. It's like, I think if you're waiting for that. And yes, Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift are engaged. They're planning on getting married. But as we know from Hollywood, just because you get engaged doesn't necessarily mean that that's like the end of the story. Like she was with Joe Alwyn longer than she's been with Travis Kelce. They broke up. Like, yes, they weren't engaged. And yes, like she's framing this as like, okay, I finally found the person, but I'm not, you know,
you're not buying it yet. And even so it's not for, I get it.
They
can't be your everything.
Yeah. If they announce that they're breaking up in, you know, 2 years, like, would you be so shocked? Like, I don't know if I would. So,
I mean, I think I agree with the sentiment that it's like a lot of these songs either dance on or explicitly say like, oh, thank God. Like, I got my happy ending. This is all I needed. And it's like, well, no.
Like, the game is not over with quite yet.
And so it's like, it's hard to take it seriously when she's like, Oh, like, I think the devastation of when I said I don't believe in marriage, that was a lie. Like, I think that's an interesting sentiment, and it's in it. And it echoes like a lot of confusing things she's saying about on Midnights, where it's like, what is this girl saying? Like, why is she like pretending she doesn't? She obviously wants to get married. Like, that's all she's been singing about.
Right.
And so, yeah, sort of the whiplash of that, I think, will be interesting to see as she goes through life. Because even if they do get married, even if they do have kids, even if they do live happily ever after, I don't think that's a guarantee that she will always feel this happy. Like, I think there's ebb and flows to relationships, and they cannot be your everything, and they cannot be your salvation, because you will always be an island unto yourself mentally and emotionally. So yeah, like, working through that, I think, will be interesting, because right now she's in this, admittedly, she's admitted that this is like a honeymoon phase, and like, she's just enjoying being in love. And I think that in itself is probably healing for someone like her. And there's been a lot of freedom that comes with loving Travis Kelce for whatever reason that she didn't feel she had with past loves. But yeah, no, it's definitely interesting, like, thinking about how she writes about relationships. And I don't know if this relationship has brought depth to understanding dynamics. It just seems like a very comfortable, warm bath of a resting place.
And if we say, you know, like, oh, famous people be like stay the same age that they were when they become famous, it's like, this is, I think, like, a kind of juvenile in some ways, like, way of looking at love and relationships and stuff.
I do love the line where she's like, well, she says something about like Ferris wheels, lilacs and kisses, and I don't know, you won't care, but I do think there are some pretty images on this, but I do think it struggles under the weight of its own like hubris of trying to do everything, and tying it to eldest daughterism and loving a youngest child. I don't know, it got kind of lost.
Yeah Then the eldest daughter aspect, like, that feels like it could be a whole other song. Moving on to number six, ruin the friendship.
Jesus Christ.
Which I do think, okay.
So, oh, you like this one. You mentioned this one. Yeah, I remember that now.
I really like this. I feel like this is where you get to see her, like, songwriting ability and her storytelling ability, like, really shine. Because it sets up this, you know, story about, like, oh, how she thinks back to high school, and there was this moment where she could have kissed this boy that she liked, but she didn't, and how she sort of, like,
he's dead.
Well, and how she sort of regrets this, but then you don't realize that he's dead until you know, the back half of the song, when she sort of, like, does this twist where it's oh, like, I got this phone call, he died, I went to the funeral. And it's like, yeah, I wish, like, life is short, and you don't know when you're going to get these opportunities. Yeah. And, like, why don't you, you know, sort of take them when you have them, and not be so, you know, anxious and worried about, like, oh, like, is this going to change something in my chemistry class? Of like, okay, nobody cares. Like, you're not going to think about that when you're older. And I also think it does a good job of showing how, like, when you're young, these things are massive to you. Yeah. And then as you get older, you realize that they're not, and that's sort of not something that you can share with a younger person. Like, it doesn't matter how much you tell that to a 14-year-old, they're not going to understand it.
Yeah.
So I thought that, like, I felt like the way that the storytelling and metaphors and stuff all worked here worked in a way that made the metaphors on most of these other songs look really bad.
Yeah.
I was like, this feel like, do I think this is her best song, like, or like the most catchy song on this album? Like, no, not necessarily. And this does feel like something that would have been, you know, that would have sat nicely in one of her other albums. I think, like, it feels a little bit of out of place here.
Yes,
but I do think it sort of is a weird reminder smack dab in the middle of this of, like, oh, this is what this person is capable of, and not what we are getting here.
No, I can appreciate that. I think that makes sense. I grew up on If I Die Young, and I just cannot go back to the graveside pop. I just, like, the morbidity of it, and having it, like, sit here in an album where she's like, all of these tracks matter. I couldn't do this album without any one of them. And it's like, well, what does this song matter? I don't know. I don't know if we needed the dead kid in this album, but I see your point.
Like, I don't, it feels weird in this album, 1000%. Like, I don't, like, it makes no sense why that's here. It doesn't, it's not giving anything to the, like, showgirl ethos. Yeah. It's a love song, but not about, like, being in love. It's about, you know, sort of, like, this passing. This feels like something that should have been on either, like, Evermore or, like, on one of the, you know, like, the Aaron Dessner albums. Yeah. But I did, I did like the construction of it lyrically in a way that I, you know, that like Wood is not quite delivering. So, yeah.
What but, about Actually Romantic? Taylor Swift.
Okay.
There's the pop disc.
Okay. The beef. Actually Romantic. I've been, have I been dreading this?
I just can't. I'm already like, I'm already annoyed about your opinion on this and I don't even know what it is.
Okay, do you want to give your opinion first?
Okay, I will preface your opinion by saying I don't think it's that deep. I think both of these women are successful. They'll be fine. Neither of them, I think, will be hurt by either one's song about them. I think that this song proves like she's pretty indifferent in her irritant. I should say she's irritated, but she's not devastated by Charlie XCX's opinion of her. And similarly, I do not think Charlie XCX is ruined by this song. This song is just a fun, flippant, cheeky, kind of petty song from Taylor Swift. And I love a petty Taylor Swift. And so there's enough fun on this song that I think both can coexist. I don't think it has to be a beef with a winner and a loser. It's just like a silly pop beef. That's where I stand. And okay. I think she hides a little bit more about Olivia Rodrigo on this track behind the more obvious Charlie XCX references.
Mm. Okay. Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard that take.
Yeah.
But I can see it now that you say it. I don't think that this is like a life or death anything. And I'm not sort of like, how dare she speak of Charlie this way? Like what, like I think that Charlie thinks like I think Charlie is doing her own thing, like very indifferent to all of this. I think when this came out, she probably had like a chuckle with her friends or whatnot, mm-hmm. but I don't think that she's sitting there stewing. I think that if at any point she references this, it will be more of like, hey, like, oh, remember that funny thing that happened? And less of like, oh, I got to get back at her. I don't think this is like a Nicki versus Cardi sort of like feud that we're getting into.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I don't know.
People Charlie are trying to like tie it to Kendrick and Drake. And it's like, well,
no,
I'm pretty sure that's a pretty serious allegation happening. And this is like childish.
And I also just think that like Charlie's sort of like whole ethos is kind of like, I don't know, like laissez-faire kind of whatever. Like I don't think that she's taking very many things like super, super seriously. I think kind of in the same way like Sabrina Carpenter, I think that they're both just kind of like funny people who can like roll with it. I mean, Taylor Swift even says about Sabrina in the Life of a Showgirl thing of like, oh, she was like born to be a pop star because she can be famous and like this stuff doesn't impact her in the same way that it impacts me.
Yeah.
So I think Charlie's fine. I'm not really like upset about that aspect of this song at all. I think the thing that I think is so funny is like the whole song is about how Taylor Swift is like, oh, I don't care about this. Like, mm-hmm. you're the one who cares so much mm-hmm, about this. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, you've been like clearly like stewing in this enough to like write a song about it.
2 years
and
ago.
Then, you know, like and choose it to be one of these carefully selected songs on the album. If this was something that truly like did not faze you at all, you wouldn't have written a song about it. Like not to say that she can't have feelings about it or, you know, that she shouldn't or whatever. But I feel like Taylor Swift is someone who has a lot of feelings. She feels a lot of things about most stuff. And we just had a song about how like, she's not cool on the internet. She's not punk rock. She has all these feelings. So then to pivot so quickly to this song where she's like, and I actually don't care. And you're actually the one who's obsessed with me is like, I don't know if I'm buying that sort of mentality. I think if she'd gone with like a more just straightforward, like, hey, I was hurt by this or whatever. I don't know. Or maybe she wasn't.
But the
hurt
premise
by it.
Is funny. I think it's like, this is one of those ones where it's like, that's a funny idea of like, oh, you've loved me more than any of my boyfriends have because you're so obsessed with me. Like that's
no,
whether that's true
like
or
that
not,
idea.
It's like, I think that's a funny way to approach someone making you feel insecure.
Well, it's kind of, I mean, it's like Why Are You So Obsessed With Me, like the Mariah Carey song,
yeah,
which
yeah.
I think is so, which is so funny because you do get the sense that Mariah Carey is like, why are you, like,
yeah.
why are you talking about it? Like, yeah. just leave me alone. Like, I don't care, but if you're going to keep bothering me, like, fine, I'll make yeah. a song about you. Where I think, you know, if you're going to get into sort of the discourse of it all, like, I think Charlie's song, Sympathy is a Knife, is about like feeling insecure around Taylor Swift.
But this song,
like,
I think it's important
her.
To reference, is not only about that song. Like, this is citing things that happened outside of that song. So Charlie XCX
yes.
showed us a part of her psyche, but not the whole like experience,
right.
you know? And same with Taylor now. Like, and that's the thing I think we as a general public have to remember about these sort of insights to celebrity relationships is that we will never know the full story. So like to use something as Bible, as like, this is the only truth is just, it's not fair to either of these songwriters' abilities to like write and choose and editorialize their own lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, I think that was smart of Taylor to start with various things that happened outside of mentioning the song. Like she says like, oh, you call me boring Barbie, blah, you high five my ex. Like these are things that maybe are hinted at in the song, but really she doesn't cite the song until I think the after these like other irritants that she's bringing up now.
Yeah. I mean, the song title is also sort of a reference to,
yeah.
to Charlie, but I am kind of like, okay, well, I have, it's like, boring Barbie has to be, like, I mean, one, she should be, like, making merch on that if she hasn't already, but it's, like, that's,
she
like,
never.
Like, it, you can't, like, that is such, like, so many people have said that, you know what I mean? Like, that'd be, like, someone, like, saying that I'm too loud. It's, like, okay, like, great, like, sure, like, I haven't heard that before, and I also love that, you know, we've got yet another song that she's written about Matty Healy. So
yeah. And I'm
forever
love the...
doing the least and getting the most out of this. I'm waiting for the 1975's new album to come out.
No,
because I'm
no
like
talent.
I can only imagine
no,
what
you.
Will be lurking in there.
But I do love the line, how many times has your boyfriend said, why are we always talking about her? Which I think is just like funny. And if you take out your feelings about Taylor Swift or your feelings about Charlie XCX, like this song I think is pretty like funny. Like it might not be the best diss track ever, but I think it's like it's well written, like it's funny and the music is fun and catchy, and yes, she does have that unfortunate breathy way of saying wet, but I do like the lyrics as they play out in this song.
Yeah, I think if this song was like if this song came out and it was sung by a different person and there wasn't the connections and there
yeah.
wasn't like all of Taylor Swift's baggage, I think I would find it more I think I would like it more.
Yeah.
Like the line about how many times has your boyfriend said, why are we talking about
yeah.
her? I'm like, how many times has your boyfriend said, why are we talking about her? I'm like, I feel like this is going, like this could go in both directions. Like I would love to,
yeah.
to call up Travis and call up George and
yeah.
be like, okay, who has heard more about this pop beef?
I do think like, I do see a world in which Taylor is so over Charlie that it's sort of like, what's happening here? And I think, unfortunately or not, like Charlie is a non-threat, you know, like that's absolutely there's no crossover currently. And I think they have all this like history of kind of not getting along on the Eras tour the Reputation tour, where Charlie was like, it was like performing for a bunch of 12-year-olds each night. Like, so I do feel like there's a universe in which Taylor Swift was surprised that she was a reference point on Brat. But obviously, I think there's a universe where she should have listened to that song and moved on with her life, you know? So The duality of Taylor is always fascinating.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm sure that Taylor was surprised when she heard that song. Yeah. Like, that makes total sense to me. Yeah, but it is kind of like these two people are operating in such different ecosystems. The beef quality of it is like, this is weird because, like, you're not fighting for the same things. You're not operating in the same places. You don't want the same things. Like,
but that's why I like that she played it off as like a joke. Like, it's not that she's admitting she was hurt, because I think that would be more of a, like, if she took this and made a what's better than revenge, like a really slap you in the face, I hate your guts type of song, then that would have felt like a low blow. But if she's just like, okay, like, LOL, then it feels like less of a punch down, which I think is some of the critics have been like, oh, Taylor's punching down.
Yeah, I don't love the punch down of it all. But I do think that there's a version of this where, like, if she hears that Charlie's, like, you know, sort of saying these bad things about her, and her response is like she, I don't know what the song of this is, you know, kind of say, like,
it would be
like, I thought we were like confusing. Friends.
Yeah.
You know, like, I understand that you're sort of like too cool for me, in quotes, but like, I always like thought you were talented. I brought you on the tour. I've never said anything bad about you. Like, yes, I dated this guy who was, you know, whatever with your husband, but I never had like any real beef, and it sort of took me off guard. And I felt a little bit sad about the fact that, you know, you're going around saying these rude things about me when I, you know, didn't have those feelings.
No one would have allowed that.
But no. Well, I mean, if she had written the song, clearly it would have been allowed to make it to the album. So,
well, I know, but I think that would have been received even worse, probably.
She's always the victim.
Oh, poor Taylor.
This goes back to my like theory on Taylor 101. Is like, I think that there's just like a slight amount of disingenuousness in a lot of what she does.
Yeah.
And this feels like it has that like stench about it again, this song in particular. And I think that some of the, like, I think that there have been albums that have had less of that.
I think this is very true. I think this is petty Taylor. I think this is, the line where she's like, I literally never bring this up, like, or what does she say? She's like, I promise I'm never the one who seeks out drama or whatever.
Right. It's like sure.
That line I'll give you is okay, DeLulu. But I do think that this essence of how she's responding to a heartfelt sort of like deeper mythology of insecurity from Charlie XCX, this is true. This is how Regina George would view any woman being like, wait, you make me feel insecure. It'd be like, well, bitch, like, why are you so in love with me? You know, like, this is Taylor to me. And I think that's interesting.
And I guess looking at it that way, it is true. Yeah. Okay, on to, I mean, I think these, we're going to rattle through some of these.
Yeah, I hate it. Wish list. Thank you. Good night.
Bad.
Hate it so much. Hate it. Hate everything about it. Hate its existence. Hate its catchphrases. Hate the idea that she daydreams about wanting none of this attention. That's the lie. This is the fakest Taylor. Thank you.
I also don't like this. I like morally was opposed to, and they should have what they want. They deserve what they want. Hope they get what they want. It's like, no, actually, you don't always deserve what you want. You shouldn't have what you want, especially if the things you want are all of these fancy,
Taylor.
Like, not every person, quote unquote, deserves a yacht life under chopper blades. Like, no. Like, you can say we all want different things, but the thing I want is whatever. But I was like, nobody deserves a Palm d'Or. You know, like,
what about J.K. Rowling? Does she deserve all this, Taylor? I haven't heard anyone get hung up on that line, but that's interesting. Yeah.
She says it multiple times.
Yeah.
And I was just kind of like, I don't think I agree with that as a stance.
Some people should not get what they want. Okay.
Well, and like if she said like, and everyone deserves to be happy, great. Right. But the things that she's listing are like insane, like but privileges.
It is a specific song. I don't think she's literally saying.
Yes. Like... No. No. I know. Yeah. No. I know what I know. Like in. I mean, I think it's a bad song on about 50 different levels. But yeah, if we had to pick out one thing that was sort of irksome, that's the one. Yes. Yeah. The, yes.
And I hated the. I what is she's like, I literally haven't listened to this again because I hated it so much. I've re-listened to the whole album, but I skip this one every single time. So she says something about like,
about all the kids and
we tell everyone to leave us the fuck alone and they do. And it's like, you will never, ever enter a phase of life where you want people to stop talking about you. So please
never.
Be honest. Thank you. Never.
Yes. No. Oh, no. No one has ever been more obsessed with attention. Yeah. Like she, even when she goes away, it's for attention. Like when she left for Reputation, it was not like, oh, like, let me get away from this toxic industry. It was like, oh, I'm going to wait. And then everyone's going to be built up the hype. And then I'm going to come back. Like she is an attention whore. Like, which I mean, fair enough, but yeah. Okay.
Okay, let's get into it.
Now we're on to Wood. My gosh. Like,
bring back Jesus.
Really?
I honestly, this song's confusing because of the mixed metaphors. And she mentions this in multiple interviews where she's like, yeah, this started out as just like a song about, what's the word? Superstitions. And that's like the whole first two verses. It's just like, oh... pennies stepped on a crack, black cats went under a ladder, like all of that. And then suddenly there's this whole like innuendo about Travis Kelce dicking her down, and it's just like confusing. But my least favorite thing Taylor Swift has ever done in her long storied career is when she says new heights of manhood and name drops her fiance's motherfucking podcast. I was just like, absolutely not. No. Have some self-respect.
This song is bad because of the mixed metaphors, but it's also bad because of both sets of mixed metaphors. It's like the superstitions at the beginning are the most boring superstition. Like, this is such a bland song. Again, it's like... second grade brainstorming, like, who has, like, what's an unlucky thing? Yeah, a black cat? Okay, great. Broken it's like, there's mirror, there's nothing interesting or nuanced or whatever in that part, which I mean, like, granted, sure, fine, whatever. Like, she doesn't need to be a great songwriter in every song.
Yeah.
But then, to be like, the curse on you is broken by your magic wand. It's like, oh God, like now we're getting all of these dick metaphors. Yeah. And then she mentions the podcast and all of the Redwood references. And it's just
from like a couple of years ago where they're like, Swifties don't want anyone talking about sex unless it's like, you broke into my redwood forest and saved my...
Yes, no, I saw that. And then somebody was like, oh, this is a reference to that. And I'm like,
I don't know how
online Taylor Swift is. Like, that she's pulling from like
is
weird.
This a big tree she thought
from
of.
From whatever. Yes, no, I think that. I think she literally got halfway through the song and was like, what if it was dick jokes? And then didn't go back and rewrite the first half. Like, because I think there would have been, like, if the whole song was just like all dick jokes, then it would have been more of a Sabrina Carpenter thing. And I think I could have appreciated it more. But the fact that it's kind of like half and half song. and then mentions the podcast,
so weird.
Also bad.
Hated it. And it's like, some people want to say this is the London Boy of this album, in that it's just like and jokey, and it's just
how dare they insult my London Boy. Okay, well, and it's unfortunately we're not getting better, because then the next song we have is Cancelled, which is
exclamation point. It's like, I like, if this song existed outside of Taylor Swift's lore, I like this song. Like, I think it's a fun sounding song. Like, I think it's catchy, but it kind of just, it gives me the ick.
I mean, I think the word canceled, unfortunately, comes with a lot of baggage that she is disregarding in writing this, where people who are canceled, like, sure, there's people who are, you know, quote unquote canceled online for, you know, I don't know, doing something weird, you know, like when
Ariana Grande licked a donut
or whatever, you know, but I think in a lot of cases, people who are canceled for being racist, for being homophobic, for, you know, being aggressive in a sexual way, for, you know, like lots of bad things. And I think to use the phrase canceled is to say that she likes her friends canceled is kind of like, I don't know. There's a certain level of weight there. Yeah, that feels a bit out of touch. And then also when you think about like, in the video where she introduces this, she talks about how like famous people, her friends, whenever they get canceled, they'll call her up, and she is sort of like, oh really, like you told that joke, like oh my gosh. And I'm like, if we think about situations where someone gets canceled for telling a joke, usually those jokes are like offensive in that they're bigoted or sexist or homophobic or racist. You know, it's like, so I just, I don't know. Like, and I kind of don't know what exactly she would be referencing. Like, is she referencing the
Brittany Mahomes thing? Exactly. She doesn't have enough of goodwill to like get, to like prove that this isn't about something deeper, because she actually like pretty famously drops people. And
yes,
and whether or not that's like, you know, she wasn't seen with Lena Dunham for years, but then turned out to be a bridesmaid. So it's like, how can we really know how like still with it she is with some of these people? But it's like, yeah, she loves to drop someone from at least the public eye. And
yeah, it's like she's not hanging out with
Ice Blake Spice,
Lively and Ryan Reynolds as much as she was.
Yeah. And it's like, she took Sophie Turner to dinner. And I think that's in my most generous reading of the song, I think that's what this is sort of about, is that women have it hard and they're judged too unfairly. And this is her song about that. But since she exists in a world where people are constantly calling her out for like, why are you always seen with Brittany Mahomes? And how can you hang out with these Trumpers, and how can you do this and that, and where do you stand on this issue? Then it does ring as really icky to have her sing this whole song about, well, I'll show you how to hide your bodies in the attic, and I know how to be bad, but just hide it better.
I also do think that unfortunately this song is like in conversation with You Need to Calm Down. And like in that song, she's more than happy to say like, oh, and the people who I hang out with are all of these LGBT people, and we're friends, and all of these like conservative people need to stop yelling at us and, you know, just let us all live. And then now she has this song, which is sort of like where she's identifying with the other group of people. And I think the fact that she hasn't, you know, said anything about all of the anti-LGBT and trans legislation that's come out, you know, it just there's something about this that feels very tone deaf for me. And I don't, again, in an album where supposedly every song is hand selected and whatnot, it's kind of like the fact that this is here is sending a weird message to me that I don't love.
Yeah. It's like in her mind, I think this is a sequel to Vigilante Shit, but since it's so specific in modern day language, and since it's now a word that's associated with this sort of like anti-woke ideology, far right sort of like, oh, you want to cancel us, it does become loaded. And I don't think she's considered that fully.
Yeah, because if she was like, I like my friends as like rebels or something, you know, like if she picked a different phrase and was sort of like, yeah, like we're sort of like rabble rousers and we don't go with the flow.
Yeah,
like I think that would be very different. Canceled is a word that either like she hasn't really thought through, or she doesn't quite register.
Yeah, because to her it's that different. She was canceled because of a phone call and everyone was mean to her and it was so rude, and now she's vindicated. And so that's her idea.
But the thing that's crazy is I feel like, I mean, I guess, like, when did Me Too happen?
No, yeah. I mean, she was literally,
I'm like, wasn't that
she was literally part of the Billboard's top 100 for her,
yeah,
for her sexual assault case. Like, yeah, this has all been, yeah, yeah. She does. I mean, 2016 is when she was canceled. Me Too happened in 2017 or 2018.
Right, because I was going to say, I don't feel like we used the phrase canceled when she was.
I think we did. I mean, it was like the Taylor Swift is over party.
Right, yes.
And I think, yeah, I think we did.
Anyways.
But yeah.
Yeah, I didn't like this song. Okay, next up is Honey, which honestly, forgettable.
I like this. This is the one where I'm like, this is the two, this is underrated on this album, and it's actually very sweet. And I like it. And it's romantic and cute.
Oh, yeah. I kind of did like this of like, now that I'm looking at the lyrics, yeah, and remembering yeah. what this was.
It's like.
Of like, yeah, yeah, sometimes people are like patronizing with the way that they say honey and sweetheart
she's
and
like,
stuff.
But, no, I like it when you do.
But it's nice. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And I think cute. That is like, yeah, that's like a it clever
a,
enough.
Yeah, it was good. It was a good Taylor Swift like piece. And I'm surprised how little attention it's getting. I mean. Mainly because I think everyone's ragging on this album, but I do like this song.
I mean, it's also kind of buried towards the end.
Yeah.
And, like, doesn't, yeah. Is sort of the least, like,
memorable. Yeah.
Yeah. Evocative. Yeah. Like, I think, like, it has a, like, I think if you switched Honey and Opalite in the track order, like, they're basically, like, filling the same sort of purpose in some regards, but
yeah,
Honey's just later, and then we end with The Life of the Showgirl, which I again think is one of the stronger songs
really
on the album.
Like, yeah.
I can see how if you wrote this album, if you wrote this song, you would think, oh, this would be a great theme for an album, and we should like sort of channel it all around this, which I think makes sense. I don't think that she executed it quite.
Yeah.
As she needed to. But I like the song. I like that Sabrina's on here and has a whole verse and isn't just singing backup for Taylor Swift, as has been known to be the case with her collaborators. And I like that it's another sort of story. I feel like Taylor Swift works well when it's a story of like, oh, this young girl who's there obsessed with a showgirl. Yeah. And the showgirl's like, you do not want this life, honey.
Yeah.
And then by the end of the song, Taylor Swift becomes that showgirl who's then, you know, sort of telling future people like,
and the bridge is so good, and we haven't had a good bridge on this whole album, so it's like this did feel like a return to form and like kind of her best work. And I do think she mentioned that this is one of the first ones she wrote for the album, so I think the cart came before the horse.
Was it Honey that she said was the song that like she wrote it and was like, oh,
no, Wishlist was the one where she's like, this is the last track and now it's perfect.
That's insane.
It's literally insane. I was like, well, you had to figure out when to end it, I guess. You knew that this is when you hit the low. This is when you hit the bottom. You're like, well, let's just call it, guys.
Like, I sort of would have loved if she wrote this and was like, let's do sort of a concept album where I'm going to take on this, like, fictitious, you know, showgirl character and write all the songs from that perspective. Yeah. Because I think that some of these could have, like, something like Father Figure could have really like worked well in that capacity. And I think that, yeah, that then that would have worked for the, this felt like on Seasons of Survivor when they would cast people in, like into tribes where they'd be like, this is like heroes, healers, and hustlers. And so they're like, it's like, what? Like, what do these mean? And then they'd have to shoehorn these people in where it's like, okay, well, you would think that the police chief would be on the heroes tribe, but actually he's hustling. So he's on the, and you're like, what? And I feel like with this, like the concept of Life of a Showgirl is a good concept. And then the songs didn't really all fit into that. So then she sort of had to be like, well, it's about all the different kinds of showgirls that you could, like anybody can be a showgirl, really, if you think about it. It's like, no, that's not what I want. What I want is an album that's very showgirly and the songs are showgirly and the, like they have the sound of that and they have images of that. And it's sort of like this Vegas-y concept album. Like, I think that would work really well. And I sort of would love to see her do a concept album because I feel like she hasn't really done one of those. And I think that might be a good interesting direction for her to head in. However, yeah. I think she has, like Elizabeth Taylor, wasted a good concept here.
Yeah. But you know what? This isn't the worst you've said about Taylor. So I guess this is your favorite Taylor album of all time. Would you agree?
Have I? No. The problem is that every Taylor Swift album that comes out, I sort of don't like. And then by the time the next one gets around, I've forgotten how much I disliked the previous one. I would really have to go through and listen to some of these.
Take my word for it. You liked it better than Midnight's Tortured Poets Department and Lover. Wait, when did we start?
I like Lover. I don't think Lover's a bad album. The problem with the last bunch of albums is that there are just so many songs on them. And so by the time I get to the end of them, I'm like, I want to kill myself. Where this, there's only 12. I'm like, and the fate of Ophelia can't come soon enough. Where this, there's only 12 songs. So I'm like,
yeah,
I feel like by the time I like sort of got into a full mode of hatred, it was done. And I was like, oh, okay, great. So, yeah, I don't know. But, well, we did it. We talked about Taylor Swift and the album and the movie thing and all 12 tracks.
We did that.
Yeah, I mean, Taylor Swift is forever hurtling forward through time. So I'm sure we'll be back before long with either that original, that one of those re-releases that's lurking in the ether or a new album
we have a docu-series
coming out so that's the next thing
can't quit her.
Well, thank you everyone for listening, and we will be back next week with I don't even know what we're talking about, but something or another. And we'll see you then. Bye.